Follows the Show, where zoologists get biting. First, let's meet our guests. This week, we have the adorkable Annie Rood. Annie Rood, which creature are you representing today?
I will be the kookaburra,
Okay. And we also have the hilarious and clever Emma Parkin.
Hello.
Can you tell us, Emma, which creature you're representing today?
Today, I am championing the nematode worm.
And our final contestant is Dr. Jack Bick! Jack, what creature are you representing today?
A cow.
A cow. Okay.
Moo.
All right. Before we start, let's have a run through of the rules. There are three rounds during which each creature must face a scenario and attempt to survive it. Contestants, as your creatures cannot speak for themselves, you must speak for them. If you think your creature is not up to the challenge, or you just haven't Googled it yet, Annie Rood, you can turn over your wild card, which I've written for you this week, and you can use the creature that's on that instead. You may only do this once in the competition. When all contestants have made their arguments, a judgment will be made. And I am the judge. The judge's rule is final. Okay, let's have the first scenario. Okay, scenario. Planet Earth 1 is fucked up.
Yep.
Planet Earth 2 is just a TV show.
Yep.
NASA have responded by terraforming Mars. Should your creature be allowed to form part of the first wave of immigrants, and why? And I think we'll have Emma with, what was your creature?
The nematode worm.
Emma with the nematode worm. Why should your creature be allowed to be one of the first immigrants to the newly terraformed Mars?
Okay, so I don't know if anybody's yet seen the film Passengers. I quite like it. It's had mixed reviews. The situation is they go into hypersleep to get to a new colony planet. The nematode worm in itself is capable of something called cryptobiosis, which is where it slows its metabolism down so that it can survive in desiccated environments. They're ubiquitous. They live almost every place in the world that you can imagine, in every environment. Some of them are parasites, some of them are free living. So if it can slow its metabolism down, then it's going to be very easy to transport on a ship into space to live on Mars. And then because it's so ubiquitous and lives in all the environments on Earth's planet, I think it would be pretty adaptable and easy enough to kind of adapt to live on Mars, and therefore I think you should take the nematode worm as your first wave of immigrants to Mars.
What's it good for, though?
Well, okay, so there's a lot of things the nematode worm is good for. It's parasitic, but the free-living ones, despite a lot of them causing disease, which is not necessarily great, some of them were used as, like, slug killers. There's this thing you can buy in America, which is basically nematode worms in a packet, and you pour them on your garden and they destroy all the slugs for you. So it'll help with agriculture, it'll help with gardening, it'll help weed out potentially invasive species on Mars that we don't like.
Martian slugs.
Yeah, pretty much. So so that's why you should have them. They're a defence for humanity, and they're also pretty cool species.
I mean, Matt, that was one of the big struggles in The Martian, wasn't it? Matt Damon's Mars slugs.
Pretty much. I mean, there are clear issues that are with slugs on Mars, and that nematodes, therefore, would help.
You're just such a hero, Emma.
Thanks. I couldn't do it without my nematode worm.
I just want to make one point. Aren't we all invasive species on Mars?
Yes.
Well, yes. I didn't actually mean invasive. I probably meant native, because we're invasive. So we want to get rid of the ones that were already there that potentially would prevent us from setting up a colony. And I think the nematode worms, although gruesome, are potentially a good way to go about this.
We're going to do a Christopher Columbus with nematode worms.
Pretty much, yeah. Because they're so parasitic as an organism. And they do so many cool parasitic things that I think they'd be really useful to us.
There is a lot of beard stroking going on. Right, Jack, the cow.
Milk, beef. I mean, I say more. I'm trying to think of a...
Cheese.
Milk, beef, cheese. Yeah.
How are you going to get it to Mars?
What, cow?
Yeah, a cow.
I will take embryos.
Cow embryos?
Cow embryos, yeah. Whack them in a... And maybe one big, really fertile heifer. Get to Mars, get the turkey baster out.
Okay.
Bish, bash, bosh. I've got beef, baby.
Do you think you'd have a problem with a small genetic pool to choose from in that case?
Maybe. However, all dairy cows. There's 1.6 dairy cows on Earth right now.
Do you mean 1.6 million?
No, billion.
You just said 1.6.
What did I say? Did I just say? Did I just say 1.6? There's 1.6 because one of them's one of them's been made into ribs, baby.
one of them's limping really badly.
Yeah, it's like that's the sad story of the family that couldn't bear to kill their pet pig for food, so they just chopped limbs off bit by bit.
Anyway, 1.6 billion.
There's 1.6 billion dairy cows on Earth currently, and they are. They are descended from as few as 50 cows from Turkey that were like in what is now Turkey, something like 10,000 years ago, which is quite interesting. So there's actually quite little genetic diversity amongst cows anyway, so, and that doesn't seem to be that much of a problem.
Okay.
Why don't you just bring loads of sperm?
I'm doing that anyway if I'm coming with them.
Not again.
Cow sperm.
I Wikipedia'd cows earlier, and so cow testicle size is really closely related to fertility, which I didn't know whether that I don't know whether that's true for all mammals.
I think that testicle size is supposed to be it's somewhat related to sexual competition rather than necessarily fertility.
Is it like literally dick swinging, like ball swinging? Like, is it to intimidate other males? Is it for, or is it like for to attract females?
I think there's like a lot of reasons that testicle sizes vary between species.
Okay.
So, but there's okay. a strong correlation. You are right. There's a strong correlation between size of testicles and amount of sperm you can produce, which is related to fertility. So, let's go with yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh. Yeah, anyway, and so big balls, but also I learned cow penises can get up to 16 inches long.
This is going to be a really useful fact for life on Mars.
I just thought it's useful to quantify these things.
I think NASA is going to be impressed by that, and that they'll.
Yeah, imagine a cow coming in space. Space station would be a fucking mess.
So we want to populate Mars with well-endowed organisms, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not overly convinced, but okay.
Cat beef, like we. Mm. It's important enough to the human race that some of us worship them. Some of us just really like eating them. We like them enough so that we've got more than a billion of them. We've got more than 1.6 of them on the planet, guys. So I think if they're valuable to us here, they're going to be valuable to us on Mars as well.
Do you think all the methane that they produce will have
an effect?
Can
use it as fuel.
All right.
Right.
Okay.
Pulled that out of my ass, didn't I?
Yeah, that's very clever winging it situation.
Whoa, I get it. Poop.
Yeah, poop. Yeah.
Because he's pulled out of his...
Yeah.
Because poop.
Oh, amazing. Bums. Right, Annie Rude.
So, the kookaburra will probably, if I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, it is a tree-dwelling bird that usually just eats a bunch of reptiles and some fish every now and then. So, that would assume water is present. And quick question. When we terraform Mars, does that include adding vegetation, natural vegetation such as trees and or rivers?
I think that would have to go in as one of the first things you did when you terraformed Mars, yeah.
Oh, then it'll be fine. That'd be pretty chill. Maybe hanging out in the gardens, you know, just like the fancy gardens for the fancy fancy people up in Mars, like the royalty. Not for the unwashed masses, of course. They will never see a kookaburra in their entire lives.
Hashtag plebs.
Damn straight. And so we'll keep those in the royal gardens, and they shall reside there. And I think they'll do a pretty good job just hanging out. I mean, it's only just for aesthetic reasons.
Do you think it'll help take the potential cultural aspects of Earth along with it as well, like the song, the kookaburra, and all the myths and legends and the musical things associated with it? Do you think that'll kind of go with the kookaburra to Mars?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the main reason we haven't extinguished the kookaburra from... planet Earth number one.
Citation Wikipedia.
What songs are about kookaburras?
The Australian Kookaburra Round.
The Kookaburra
Round?
Kookaburra
sits in the old gum tree. Have you never heard that song?
Oh, yeah, I have heard that one. Yeah. Is it called the Kookaburra Round?
Well, it's just called Kookaburra.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, so...
But
I lived there for over 3 years.
If you're ever a girl guide or a scout, you know, it's sung in a round, traditionally.
Okay. So. Oh, I see.
All right, I think it's time we wrap this up. So realistically, it's obviously going to be the nematode worm because...
What?
I can live anywhere.
Are you serious?
I can live anywhere.
You're useless.
I'm not useless. I have very learning functions, including killing slugs, but I also can live anywhere on the planet. So, for example, the nematode worm is so ubiquitous that a guy who studied them called Cobb once came up with this quote that if you got rid of all other life on Earth, you would still be able to study life on Earth and its resemblance, because what you'd be left with is a disparate spirit of everything, of mountains, of humans, with nematode worms, because they just fill, like, everything. So you just have little outlines filled with nematode worms.
But they are disease.
Not always. Some are free-living species. Some are cool.
They're going to be a lot easier to get there, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Given they're tiny.
Otherwise, I would have chosen the cow. But think about how the cow adds to global warming.
But Mars is really cold. You want it to warm up.
And you can't.
You want it, like, let's try and produce an atmosphere. I think all the CO2 and methane they create.
Surely if they've terraformed it already, they've got an atmosphere sorted.
Might be good to add to it.
Unless they've got, unless they're all living in just Big Eden Project domes.
I mean, here's the kicker here, okay? You can't put a nematode in a couple of buns and put some lettuce in there. And you can't eat it. And you can't.
Oh, I don't know, you could. People eat insects all the time.
Yeah, but Nick... but aren't they microscopic?
They can get pretty big. So there are some cases, one of their relatives, they used to be called Nematophora, which is their sister group, used to be called horsehair worms, because there was this, magically, in horses' water troughs, they would appear overnight and people thought they were horsehairs. And they were huge, and actually, they'd been living in the microscopic plankton in the water, and then they killed the plankton and burst out and filled the water. So they are actually huge, they're just like contortionists, they can pack really small.
I've changed my mind, you know. It's going to be the cow because of cheese.
No, no.
The cow wins.
Thank you very
the
much.
End.
Correct.
The end of that scenario.
Justice is served.
And on to the next scenario. Scenario. Those dirty feminazis, you know who they are from Twitter, of course.
No, what's a feminazi?
A feminazi is a construct in the minds of some male Twitter users. Only creatures with the best females are likely to survive. How will your females measure up? Oh my God, Jack, you have got this. You've got to go first.
I've got it in the bag. So, sorry, how am I going to survive?
Yeah, how are you, only creatures with the best females are likely to survive.
Why are your females
females
so the best? So the males are still going to be around, because
probably have to keep a few for breeding.
I need them for breeding. Yeah. I'm all good, like cows, big old udders, because we use them for milk and cheese. Remember the cheese?
There, I do love cheese.
Yeah. I'm not happy about the cheese situation.
Come on.
Yeah, there you go. Like, you need us for cheese. The males you kill at birth anyway. My friend Ben, when I was at school, lived on a dairy farm. When I was around once, there was a heifer going into labour, and I helped like yank the little lad out. It was a boy.
So you pulled a slug.
Anyway, yeah, help bring the calf out and help the mother lick the afterbirth off it.
The afterbirth of the calf.
No, joking. But you clear it and rub its belly and clear its airways to make sure it's all good. And they named it Jack, which was very sweet. Anyway, when I went round about 2 weeks later, I asked if I could see Jack, and they said. Jack's gone away.
To a happy farm in the sky.
Which was really sad, but I had a cow named after me for a couple of weeks. It was good. Anyway, that's right. Me done.
Okay, I'm gonna choose Emma because I can see Annie Rood is still frantically researching female kookaburras.
So nematode worms, I actually believe are hermaphrodite. So I'm gonna have to try and use my wild card and see if it's any better. We'll have to see. Lemurs, yes, that's a little bit better. I mean, at least for lemurs, there are two biological sexes, so there are males and females. I don't really know necessarily what makes female lemurs better than their male counterparts. I think they probably both have different roles within their troops, and they are therefore both valuable. However, I mean, they are the ones that provide the most parental care. They do the most nursing. They have to jump around with babies on their backs, which means they're probably like a little bit stronger, maybe. That's probably an exaggeration, but they're probably a little bit stronger. I mean, lemurs are cool in general in that they kind of do this sunbasking pose in the mornings, which makes them look like they're doing yoga. And because they're so zen as an animal anyway, it's just really hilarious. You can go to like Marwell Zoo and see all of them sitting there in kind of an om cross-legged position facing the sun for hours. And it's really cute and quite funny.
What zoo?
Marwell Zoo.
Where's Marwell?
Marwell Zoo is, oh my goodness.
It's like not in London, yeah. Isn't it?
It's in the south.
Southampton and Winchester.
Yeah, I mean, London Zoo probably has lemurs too. That's closer.
Just off the M27, guys.
London Zoo probably has lemurs as well. I'd say that the female lemurs are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and therefore are wonderful species females.
All right. Annie Rude, the female kookaburra. Now, are you going to go with the kookaburra, or are you going to give yourself your wild card?
I was thinking about the wild card, but you know what I think? I remember the question. I believe the question was, how do the females measure up?
Yeah.
Now, it is that...
See where this is going.
Look, there ain't too much of a difference apart from between the male and female kookaburra, except the fact that the females are able to lay eggs. And the males and females both actually incubate the eggs on different shifts. They just sort of take turns. The only really major difference is the... And this is where that phrase comes in. This is where the phrase measure up comes in, all right? See, the female kookaburra grows at a slightly larger rate than the male kookaburra, making it measure up...
Oh, God. Ooh, it's tenuous.
A little more than the male counterparts.
So basically they're bigger, so they're better and more badass.
If you think about it in those terms, then yes, they are.
Other functional difference apart from that they're slightly bigger.
Yeah, really, yeah. And hey, what a cool sounding name, right? Kookaburra?
Which okay. The males also share.
Which males also share.
Okay, right. I think it's time
equality,
for
guys. Equality between the sexes, ladies and gentlemen. And be proud of your female kookaburra body, all right?
Okay. Obviously, it's going to be Jack again because cheese. So that's the end of that scenario. Okay, on to the next scenario. Scenario. Choose one of your opponents and describe how you would defeat them in battle. Okay, Emma looks like she wants to go first.
Okay, as I've discussed before, nematode worms, some of them are free living species, they kind of mind their own business, they float in water, they live on land, they live everywhere. Some of them are parasitic, and these are the really, really cool ones. For example, some of them kind of live inside ants and make their abdomens grow really red and swollen so that they look more like berries, potentially to attract frugivorous birds to come and eat the ants so that the nematode can complete its life cycle in the bird.
Is that so?
So, I mean, I don't know. It would probably work for the cow as well, but I'm going to go with the kookaburra.
That's fine. Go for it.
Nematodes are very good at living in all environments. They don't have skeleton. They molt. But they have really high pressure on the inside and they kind of push outside and they thrash around and it's quite cool. They live almost anywhere. They'd be fine infecting a kookaburra. And I think if they could somehow adapt themselves to kind of utilise either some of the kookaburra's skills or grow certain parts or just kind of destroy them from the inside out like they do with little shrimp, then I think I'd probably win. And all they'd have to do is eat me and they wouldn't even notice.
So the ants would look like berries, you say?
Yeah.
That would be that's a horrifying end for a bird that wasn't carnivorous. Oh.
No, but to be fair, if they look like berries, they don't realise they're eating an ant.
Yeah, but maybe, but they like reptiles.
Kookaburras are carnivorous, aren't they?
They are carnivorous. That's what I meant. So maybe my grammar isn't too good this morning. But what I meant to say was that.
Not grammar, words.
Do you see what I mean?
What's the point, Anna Rouge? Yeah.
So a brain is a... let's not go into that.
I don't think I'm wrong. I think I could take you on.
You probably would do a pretty good job. Probably would do a pretty good job. And I'd say kookaburra is a little bit more conniving, a little bit more cunning than that.
I think they
go for the reptiles mostly.
But I don't think you noticed that you were eating me. Like,
that's
I mean,
true.
You guys are
pretty tiny.
I could use another species. It doesn't have to be an insect.
May I interject with some pedantry? Yeah. Emma, you have picked apparently an entire genus.
I picked an entire phyla.
I'm not happy about it. It's incredibly convenient. It's classic spineless nematode work.
Okay.
Sorry. Seeing as we're talking about taxonomy in a kind of way, do you know that cows? You can breed a cat like a dairy cow with an American bison to make a beefalo.
Really?
And you can breed them with a yak. Can't remember what that's called, but you can't. So there are some species of is it an undulate? Undulate? Mm. Some species of undulate that you can't. Two of which are water buffalo, and the buffalo, I think. Yeah, definitely not a water buffalo. I can't remember the other one, really. But yeah, there's loads of different cow species, mixy cow species that you can generate. So, which would indicate that... Oh, yeah, and they generate, I'm rambling, fertile offspring. So, if you use the definition of a species being that they can breed to produce fertile offspring, then they are the same species.
I do use that because that's what my GCSE biology teacher told me.
Yes, that's what mine told me too.
Given that there are 22 different species concepts and definitions, I think this would be a whole other program to discuss what a species is. Yeah,
see,
22.
Someone went to a good university.
I did.
Tell us, what are they?
Come on,
Emma.
You can say that
there are 22. No. Well, she knows that there's 22, but does she know them?
I can put them into types. There are ones that talk about reproductive qualities, including fertile offspring, but that's a bit useless if their offspring then aren't fertile. Mm-hmm. Can't go anywhere. Mm. There's also ones based on taxonomy and where they just are in the phylogenetic tree and how they relate to other things. There's ones based on morphology, and a lot of the definitions are a combination of all three, kind of thing. But basically, nobody knows what a species is. Your guess is as good as ours. The natural person inherently understands what a species is, but nobody can agree.
Also, it's because there's no such thing as a species because evolution is like an ongoing thing. It's not like one day a lion became a domestic cat in one thing. It's humans' obsession with listing and ordering and categorizing stuff.
Evolution is the spectrum, guys, okay?
Yeah, I mean, so Dawkins explains this really well in one of his books, where if you have a time machine and you go back through human evolution, there will become a point at some point where you stop breeding with your ancestors.
Which one is that, The Blind Watchmaker?
I think it was The Ancestor's Tale, actually,
I think it was, yeah.
Which is great book. Go read it. It's fun. Anyway, my entire point was that I'd use my parasitic abilities to kill the kookaburra.
Okay.
In a grotesque way.
And you're not disguising yourself as a fruit. You're going to try and get in a lizard and then get the
disguise yourself as a fruit or in a fruit.
Or I could go in water and have the kookaburra drink me. Or go in through a cut, like dog worms.
So you went through a cut.
I mean, that's what river blindness is caused by, like nematode worms. So it's either through drinking the water, I can't remember which one it is, or it's through like getting a cut and then getting the nematode worms in. That's why you don't play on dog shit playing fields when you were a kid.
Too late.
Anyway, that's how I'm gonna kill the kookaburra.
Right.
Well, it's ruthless. It's cowardly.
And it's not cowardly. It's fun. How is it cowardly? It's like espionage.
How about you fight me face to face?
I'm the James Bond.
Sorry, if anyone's cowardly, it's me.
What would the cow do? Who would the cow choose, and how would they defeat them?
Oh right, so. I'm not going anywhere near a nematode. I'm a cow. I'm not going to be any good. Kookaburra's going to fly away. I'm going for a wild card.
Ooh. Oh, shit!
Human.
Well, that works.
The most deadly of all animals.
Human and humans have got Dettol, so in your faces.
who are you choosing to attack with a Dettol?
You, Emma.
Yeah, the entire phyla of nematode worms.
I'm getting my bleach out. I'm opening the under the sink cupboard, and you're screwed.
There's literally not much I can do about this. So.
I don't think you need to argue any more on that
I'm
one,
all good.
Jack. Okay. What are you gonna do?
I think it's time to just take out the wild card. I mean, the kookaburra. I mean, like.
It's not very fighty, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's sort of carnivorous, just like just generally. But you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna open this card up, see what's on the inside. Tardigrade.
Do you know what they are?
They are the tiny little, bear things, the whatever.
Water bears.
Water bears.
Do you want someone to explain to you what they are?
I don't have a slight, I'd like to...
Isn't a water bear an otter?
No. They're like fucking really tiny. Super tiny.
So exactly, tardigrades are an entire phyla, so you can't have a dig at me for picking nematodes. I mean...
I challenge the nematode to a fist fight.
Okay, you're a little bit smaller than I am. Like
and
a
I
lot.
Will, I'll go through your wounds.
Why are they called a bear? They sound adorable.
They're very cute.
They are adorable.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I challenge you to a fist fight in space.
Well, I mean, to be honest, we could try and see who could outsleep the other one, because both nematode worms and tardigrades are capable of cryptobiosis, and they're able to shut their metabolism down to survive. So we could see who could last the longest.
That sounds fun.
But tardigrades are really cute, and they're basically
nail
indestructible.
You know the tardigrade is going to win that.
I mean, to be fair, who wouldn't want the tardigrade to win that? I mean, they're indestructible, cute little bears in insect form.
Don't do that. I want a proper fight, dude.
Sorry.
Come on. This is...
Given up.
No. Please.
What else would you do? How would you attack me?
I think fist fight in space is a good one because
the tardigrade is tiny comparison to the nematode worm.
Yeah, no, but
I'd possibly
be dead because you're in space.
Are you probably,
no, because we'd both be in cryptobiosis, so neither of us would be dead.
You'd just both be sleeping next to each other in space.
It's like a little slumber party,
mm-hmm.
huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how about we choose friendship?
Yeah, let's just have a slumber party. This is why insects are so cool.
And guys, if you do have a slumber party and things get hot and heavy, know what you'll be able to do it secretly because in space, no one can hear you breed.
Oh, God. Right. Okay. Jack, again, you've won because...
Yep.
Not because of cheese.
Well, not because of cheese this time, but because... Well, but also because of
thank
cheese.
Thank you, Catherine.
But because humans are the most destructive, horrible creature on the planet, aren't they? So you could have destroyed everyone with that.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes Jack not only the winner of this scenario, but the overall winner of Creature Wars! Yay!
Thank you very much indeed.
Woo! But the good news is that the nematode worms made friends with the tardigrades, and I think that's a real achievement.
Did we have a great time? We had a great time. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
We did.
See you next week, huh?
Yeah.
We just bitched
about the humans at the slumber party.
Do you want to watch Definitely Maybe next week?
Yeah, let's do it. Actually. We're so there.
Okay, let's say bye!
Bye!
Bye-bye. Bye.